Blog Talk Radio.
Betting bit from earlier actually paid off and wasn't just something else for Tony D'Angelo to do. The betting thing, that is, at least he's, when it happened, I was like, okay, it wasn't the most convincing he's ever been, but at least he's not killing or kidnapping people this week. And then it, wrapped around back into the main event. So that element worked for me. I could absolutely do without the theatrics of the siren and the lights and everything, making it seem more telegraphed than it already was. But I think that the final showdown of like, okay, yeah, you already figured it out, but these indeed are the teams, and somebody's going to yell the word, and they're going to start brawling as the show goes off the air. I thought that was effective enough and worked for me.
All right, so we do have a main event for it'll probably be the main event for War Games, but I don't know. Certainly, with the folks in power who are now, I would say almost certainly. But we have that main event, and we got most of the rest of the card also, and we will talk about that. Let's go to an email real quick. This is from JB, so I don't know about real quick. He do say some words, but here we go with JB. My email was in the wrong place. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Last week's releases, which included the rest of Hit Row, made me consider something I'd be thinking even more strongly. I'm not sure that NXT 2.0 can really be a success. 2.0 was supposed to be WWE getting back to a true developmental. Is there a wrestler that should check all of Vince's proverbial developmental boxes more than Top Dollar? Big guy, relatively athletic, with a non-indie football background who was seemingly, at the worst, competent on the mic. He was even featured heavily on WWE shoulder content in WWE's Most Wanted Treasures on A&E. I'm not even mentioning the blatantly obvious talent of Swerve and Ashante because of the stereotype that Vince inevitably labeled them, I'm sure. So am I. I'm getting to the point where I'm becoming more convinced that Vince and his yes men don't actually have a plan. NXT 2.0 is just a way for them to justify another failure and deflecting the blame where it's always belonged, on Vince's doorstep. He can't see talent anymore, whether it was crafted in the indies or molded under his own watch. They just fly by the seat of their pants on a daily, maybe even hourly basis and collect their backed in TV, Peacock, and Saudi checks. I've been a loyal follower of NXT for many years and have even gritted through regular WWE programming to keep in the loop. But I think I'm at my breaking point if things don't start looking up very quickly, and I think the ratings across the board prove many others feel that way. Love the show and go VIP. I will say that one of the few things that has kept me watching 2.0 is LA Knight and his promo ability. They also so seem genuine, fiery, and on point to me. I truly believe he wanted to stomp out Gacy after their backstage it says entire. I don't know what that autocorrect was supposed to be before their match. I actually think Knight would be much better used on Raw or SmackDown. His promo ability is perfect for Vince in that it can, in an entertaining way, fill up a good amount of TV time. Yes, I like him too, but I sure don't want to see him as a face again because that didn't work for me at all in NWA. All the things that are effectively annoying about him in a heel role were just actually annoying when he was being a babyface on NWA. So hopefully they can resist the urge and make sure that he kind of leans back that way after this feud. I will say this for NXT. I don't think you have to worry too much about face and heel roles, especially these young ones. But I think any of these talents are kind of leaning which way they have to be on sometimes a week-to-week basis, like with Briggs and Jensen. They're cross-training, they're seeing what they want out of these guys. So that's part of that. But Grayson Waller, we've seen the full gamut of face to heel from him in a very short amount of time. I don't know what just happened to my insides, but that was my little gift to you, the listener. Tom, before another one of those things happens, anything to say on JB's email?
Speaking of running the gamut, which indeed Waller has done last week, it was really weird when he was behaving like a heel on lashing out. But this week, with interrupting the logo at the beginning, that made it made a lot more sense, and I think will work for him, even though he's been presented as an underdog baby to this point. JB's email sends my mind through a gamut of macro points that have been plaguing me lately, that have been irritating me lately. I have commented over and over again, basically in I think what I'm about to say would be a diminishing of the point, but basically in defense of all of the WWE releases, although there are individual ones that that have come up that I'm like, okay, I don't know what they were thinking there, though, but for the most part, I get what they're doing from a business standpoint. Hit Row, though, is probably the most egregious one that we've seen out of any of these rounds of releases, and I'm including Bray Wyatt in that. I know that, like with the Bray Wyatt thing, there could be issues backstage that we are not privy to. We don't work with these people. It's not our job to be back there with them, so we don't know what that is like. But talk about an act that just had so much potential and proven talent. No, I'm not including B-Fab in that anymore, unfortunately. That wasn't going to translate, I fear. But when you get to what was the remaining trio, it is just baffling that they decided to cut bait in the way they did. So JB's question is 2.0 a sham? Can it really be a success? And a lot of that is spurred from, and does WWE even have a plan? And all of that is spurred from what he's seeing from the Hit Row release. This is probably too specific for what JB is asking about. I'll just point out the obvious that Hit Row was not a 2.0 act, so I don't think we can blame any change in mentality to 2.0 on that. But I think looking past that specificity, I believe I understand the point that JB is making, is that regardless of whether it was Black and Gold or 2.0, Vince and the gang are just like way too picky with these acts, or more quick to the trigger with releases if everything doesn't look entirely peachy right out of the gate. And that is sort of how it appears on the surface. Again, I can't even begin to defend the Hit Row release except for to say, like, maybe there was something backstage we don't know about. There's sort of like a tangentially related thing that I don't even want to bring up, but it's so tangential that I wouldn't even want to pin the person associated with it so there's vague for you, whenever we get these questions, it's just like, oh, it's so meaty and my brain doesn't know which path to take. I think we can't accuse WWE of suddenly not having a plan, or that we've finally started to figure out that they don't have a plan, because that has been evident for quite a while. It's been evident for a long, long time. I mean, probably decades, but especially over the past several years, that Vince is concerned with the top angles, which is why I'm a defender of Cleopatra's egg, and I think it's ridiculous that people are complaining about it. I think that those same people are going to be the people who in 2023 are going to be going like, oh man, they've been working this, you know, as a long-term angle. WWE never does that anymore. Oh wow, the seeds were planted all that time ago, and they'll be impressed. But you know, beyond that, they absolutely do not and have not had a plan for these wrestlers, and that's been part of the lack of what I've called a handshake between developmental and the main roster. How can I spin that into a new point that I haven't already said several times? It's just unfortunate, but I don't think that's a reason to say that NXT 2.0 can't be a success. I don't know. I guess I'll just send it back to you, Kelly. Is there anything you can mine out of what I said as to, like, did I give a reason as to why NXT 2.0 can be a success? I'm just not seeing the distinct connection that it's like that it's doomed, and that anything that we've recently seen from the main roster and from Vince McMahon is any new information that changes the way that we have to look at this.
I think the biggest disconnect is that the way that people, fans, viewers want to think of it as a success is wildly different from whether internally it is considered to be a success. They will consider it a success if it churns out new talents that are homegrown. And the average fan will think it's a success if it does ratings, which it's really not going to. It really is not. There's no way around that. I think that it will get worse and worse until it hits a spot where everybody watching it wants to see this developmental show. And that is for the, and so anything else to them is immaterial with always. You can't speak about this without at least mentioning USA doesn't want that. They would prefer Black and Gold. I have almost no doubt. I didn't even really talk about the plan thing because of exactly what you said. It's clear that they don't have plans. Like their plans are, you're lucky if you have a month or two in advance where you can feel like it. But even when people talked about the mid card even being very, very hot and like the Attitude Era where it seemed like everybody at least mattered, everybody had a feud, everybody had some kind of goal, even if it wasn't championship gold. There was always something going on for everybody. There was a lot to like about that. There was a lot to dislike, but whatever. Everybody knows that. And even then, it didn't really seem like they had a plan because they would retcon major months-long storylines, like when Austin turned heel, and you're like, well, then why did he beat the hell out of his heel partners for months just to hide the fact that he was a heel when it wouldn't matter when he would have done it. They've been at that time, there was, if you watch week to week in that era, you'll see the total lack of logic and that somebody in, it's like Richard Kelly, director of Donnie Darko, was in the writer's room and saying, do you know what it'd be cool? And they're like, that doesn't make any sense, Richard. And he's like, nobody will notice. So so there you go. That's how.
You know what the most wonderful thing about the Attitude Era was? The Attitude Era that we love so much and wish that wrestling could be that good and that popular again. The best thing about it, Kelly, was that every single episode of the weekly TV started with a match. Right? As soon as the show opened, the bell rang, and then we got a match that didn't mean anything, but it had a lot of action in it. People hitting each other, you know, on a wrestling show. You never get that on a wrestling show, people hitting each other, but the Attitude Era gave it to us, didn't they, Kelly?
They sure did not.
Can you tell I've got this Cleopatra's Egg thing is driving me crazy? All of Twitter last night was just like, how can WWE open a show with this top angle involving Vince McMahon and The Rock? the gall of them to do that. And I'm like, well, you're watching and tweeting about it. And then NXT opens tonight with a match. And what does everybody do? Complain.
Yeah. I mean, not that I want to see a time where the opening of the show was Triple H talking for 20 minutes and managing to cram in about 5 minutes worth of anything, because that's how fast he talked.
you know how much I love the guy and how much I love shows opening with promos. But even when I go back and watch that, I'm just like, ooh, could have figured something better out than that. Right.
Oh, I know. I mean, yeah. And I liked him then and I like him now. And I feel but that era wasn't, oh my gosh. And you knew it would happen. And you were just like, maybe. It didn't even have to be a match. Just somebody else. Give me a 25-minute Crash Holly interview. Actually, that would have been hilarious. What would that
have
been?
Yeah,
yeah. We'd still be talking about it today, that's for sure. Yeah, lest we go even further off the point, JB. I'm going to continue watching NXT for this gig. I think I would probably drop in and out at this point if I wasn't there. Although, it does seem like dropping out for a month means that I would miss some major development points for new talents. So that's the only thing there that worries me. So I said we were going to put 410 on the air first, but that might have been while we were still muted. On my side, it didn't show me being muted. It showed us being unmuted. But if I start the show that way, apparently I have to mute and unmute. It's a disaster, folks. It's a stupid setup, but that's what I had to do. Thanks, Darrell, for the heads up. Let's go to 410. If you heard that you, too, are unmuted.
Yes. Hey. Hi, this is Reverend Keith in Baltimore. How are you?
Hey, Rev Keith. How are you doing? I'm doing great.
I'm good, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I can kind of relate to your discussion from JB's email. There seems to be some sort of disconnect now with NXT 2.0. I'm not here to complain, but it lacks the intensity and I guess the storylines are different from before. I think that I see what WWE is trying to do, mixing the young talent with the old guard or the OG, so to speak, such as Ciampa, Gargano, Dunn, and the like. But it seems like everything is being rushed. It's like the storylines are all over the place, you know, and it was kind of evident, like, as you guys were mentioning about Tony D'Angelo being woven into the War Games match. It seemed like they was just throwing people together. I mean, I enjoyed the triple threat, okay? But then at the conclusion, you had all these guys in the ring. It kind of took away from the match itself. And it was like, you know, wow. You know, I looked at the clock. I saw they still had time left before 10 o'clock. So I said, okay, they're going to give us a little smars and a little, you know, pull apart. But this was like chaotic, man. So it just seems like they're rushing things. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I have to agree. It seems like, especially because it just seems like scenes are missing. And it would be so easy to fix this. Like, all they really have to do is give us a scene where something's going on in the foreground. And in the background, we see Mello and Trick talking to D'Angelo. And maybe it's as straightforward. It is wrestling. So maybe it's as blunt as actually showing them handing him some money. But on the show that featured a lot of weed already, it might be a bad look if we had another, like a secret money exchange in the back with a mob guy. But whatever. You can establish that there is a relationship, even if that relationship is like a hired gun sort of relationship. So that would have been nice. There's no need to rush. They have a lot of talent. I understand they're trying to get everybody on the show every week. Not a thing they have to do, but they're trying to do it anyway. But yeah, long-form storytelling, I've never been upset that they went with long-form storytelling. I've never rude the fact that, like, oh, why did they try to tell this storyline over the course of several weeks and get me interested in a match? I've never thought that was too bad. But there's a million times I couldn't believe a good match or a good angle was given away with too little build. I understand they have to try a lot of things with these talents right now. Hopefully, when we get this non-takeover out of their system and that's out of the way, maybe 2.0 has more time to breathe and we do some long-term TV storylines before the next non-takeover takeover, and make that, and don't do one until April. I'm full on board with not doing them more than 3-4 times a year if the TV product's going to suffer as a result, Tom.
And of course, they'll keep the named shows in there, like our Halloween Havocs. But Reverend Keith, very glad to hear from you on our show. Always, always nice. And yeah, you know, I talk about people irrationally and self-contradictingly complaining on Twitter, sticking in my craw. Your thoughtful criticism does not fall under that umbrella, my friend. I appreciate that. It is highly welcome. And in this case, I do agree. I'll try to be brief in saying that on top of everything you guys have said, it doesn't feel, although there was a lull for a while, it doesn't feel like the manic go, go, go of the recent Wednesday night quote unquote war has completely gone away. It moves along at a very fast clip. I feel like I can, you know, if I do need to step away from the television, I need to rush, because if you blink, you miss something. You know, if your attention strays for one moment, it's just like, wait, what did Pete Dunne just say? I guess it's probably fine. Pete Dunne always says the same thing, right? But I did kind of miss that because they're just flying through everything. And especially right now, it's just, well, like Hell in a Cell, like Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. Well, I guess bad example for this particular year, but War Games is a date on the calendar. And so that's why these four people are going up against these four people. There's more of a storyline in the women's match that makes sense. And I think the women's match even kind of makes sense with the idea that War Games is on the calendar and Mandy's more focused on Kaylee and vice versa, and Raquel is more focused on Dakota and vice versa. But it's like, hey, War Games is on the calendar, so let's align with each other against the other people we have the issues with. That is working for me on the women's side. But yeah, on the men's side, it's just like, okay, they decided to do 2.0 versus Black and Gold, and these are the guys that, even though they never get along otherwise, they're getting along for the sake of this because it's November. So yes, I absolutely agree with those criticisms. I feel those criticisms. Ultimately tonight, they got me to where I felt like this week's chapter worked, but it's just barely over the fence onto the working side. It was rocky.
All right, Keith, if you got another thought, go ahead.
I would also like to mention that I think that at some point in the near future, Kaylee Ray will turn heel. I've watched her career on the independent scene and even in NXT UK. I think she makes for a better heel than face. But I do like the direction, as you just stated, Tom, in which the writing team is going with the women's War Games match. I think that match has the alignment seems more realistic, so to speak, as opposed to the men's, where they just thrown together these eight guys, you know, four against four, just to make the match. But the women's is going to be pretty nice. I think that getting back to the men now, I feel that if the heel team wins, Bron Breakker will probably be the one who scores the pinfall, and perhaps it may be on Ciampa, just so that he can once again get a title opportunity. You know, that would be my prediction. That would be how I would book the men's War Games match. As far as the women's, we'll see how that goes. I need to think about that one, but I do like the alignment better on the women's side. Once again, gentlemen, it's always good talking with you. Thank you for taking my call, and you guys have a blessed night.
Thank you so much, Keith. It's always great to hear from you. We've got, let's talk those War Games segments before we move on with our other call. Okay, so we've got the women. We've got Toxic Attraction and Dakota Kai doing her best to be crazy. But, I mean, she was in the role she was supposed to be playing. The mean, sarcastic one that is perfect for her, but that's not what we have right now. And we're going to make the best of it, folks. And they will face Cora Jade, Raquel Gonzalez, Io Shirai, and as we know now, Kaylee Ray. We needed probably, I assume Zoe Stark would have been in this. Although it seems like pretty cool that KLR was shoehorned into this, almost to the point where maybe they would have kayfabed an injury to Zoe Stark and moved along with Kaylee Ray here. Hard to believe, you know, this happened so quick. She just announced, I'm on your team and I'm in the advantage match next week. And nobody was mad about it. Nobody was mad about her staking her claim. Now, maybe they shouldn't be, because in kayfabe world, she did hold the NXT Women's Championship for forever and a day. And she's a badass. She'll kick your head off. She's great. I decry the fact that she had to get a dye job, but hair care regimen still on point. Kaylee Ray, just great hair. So very excited that she is part of this. Hard not to see her. I don't know. Do I see her turning here, or is that just so obvious to me because she's been playing heel for so long? I'm not so sure she's going to, and I'm not even sure I'm supposed to be thinking she might. I think that this is maybe meant to be a little more straightforward than that. We did get Cora Jade versus Mandy Rose. Both champions, main champions, were in non-title matches today. One of them even won in this brave new NXT, but Mandy Rose was not that one. Ahead of the match, she was walking with her two mates, Mandy Rose wearing this tan suit that was like basically the same shade as her tanning booth hue that had her looking like a leather mannequin. And so we got that ahead of this match. Cora Jade wins with a roll-up in 401 after Kaylee Ray comes out with a bat, throws the bat to referee Daryl Sharma, which somehow only distracts him and Mandy, but not Cora, who was able to get the roll-up in the pin. Very contrived stuff here, but whatever. It got us to Kaylee Ray, and that's cool. On the men's side, we already knew most of what we were getting, kind of, or at least Tom tweeted about it earlier in the day and was pretty well on point. In the opener tonight, Tommaso Ciampa.
Pretty well, meaning 8 for 8.
Were you 8 for 8?
I was 8 for 8, and I said that Loomis and Williams will get involved on the outside.
Well, pretty well is basically the highest compliment I'm able to give people, because I'm cold and dead inside, Tom. So,
8 for 8 on the women's side too. But of course, at that point, we had already had so much storytelling that, you know, I'm not going to pat myself on the back any more than I already did over the past 30 seconds.
And I didn't see last week's show, so I couldn't well guess. thought I'd fit it in sometime in the last week, but I sure didn't. Ciampa defeated Grayson Waller in a 13-minute, 29-second, pretty strong opener. Straightforward. Ciampa wins, but a strong opener. And Waller did some mic time at the beginning. Not your 25-minute Triple H special, but he talked for a few minutes. And I think he's pretty okay as a heel. And then, of course, we got the big pull apart. Well, no, not a pull apart. Nobody was pulling apart. The big 4-on-4 brawl at the end as the audience was chanting War Games. So we don't have Undisputed Era in this thing. We don't even have a member of Undisputed Era in this War Games match, which is bonkers, but that is the truth. And, you know, if they couldn't have all of them, I guess it's kind of cool that they just ripped the Band-Aid off and none of them are in it. So, yeah, doesn't that seem like a long time ago now? Tom, on that meaty bit of War Games stuff.
Yeah, last year was the Pat McAfee one, wasn't it? That does feel like more than just 1 year ago.
Yeah.
Possibly for other reasons than just that. But, yes, point taken. I think the only thing that I didn't already say on the men's side of things is that, you know, on paper, when you say Ciampa and Waller are going to go the time that they went, it might sound iffy considering Ciampa's track record and how new to this brand Waller is. But Waller's, even though he's heel now and the over the course of 3 weeks turn, over the course of 2 weeks he didn't really turn. He just sort of started, you know, gradually went over to the heel side. You know, even though he's doing that now, he was an underdog babyface. So this fits with his presentation. Like, I think you were spot on when you said that he's doing what he's doing something very similar to what Sami Zayn was doing. And when Sami Zayn was new, I mean, yes, people respected him more because they knew more about Generico, but he was doing these kind of matches against much more established guys and kicking out of their biggest stuff. So I'm, you know, I'm okay with Waller doing that here. I felt Toxic Attraction walking backstage and Dakota approaching them was unnecessary, but it worked perfectly fine. When you say this show feels like it's been skipping scenes lately, that is a perfect way to put it. One of the things you missed last week, actually two of the things you missed last week, no, it was one thing that you missed last week with MSK, and then it was the week prior to that with the Grizzled Young Veterans robbing an Uber driver thing that I'm still not even sure if that's exactly what happened. It just seemed like once they got into
it. I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
Well, right, yes, yes. When they showed those things, it felt like actual parts of it had been edited out. And yeah, so I'm not going to complain about them including Coda officially walking up to Mandy Rose. You know, that worked for me. The Kaylee Ray smashing stuff in the background is very silly. I think, like, of all of the, you know, oh, we had to give somebody something, so you have a thing now. Of all of those that we're seeing right this moment, that one is one of the silliest. It's just, you know, like, she's just smashing stuff all the time, wherever she goes. Probably did more damage than the Knight versus Waller brawl that went throughout the night and they kept cutting back to, and you kept on hearing stuff falling down in the background. Yeah, I had to look it up when you said that you resent that she got a dye job, and I was like, wasn't her hair already like that? But you're right, it is redder now, closer to Fire Truck, but close enough to what she had before that I had to look it up. I love that they did it last week and they're doing it again now. Did they do it the week before also? Well, what? No. It was just last week and this week that they've kept Zoe on screen during her injury time. So often the person just disappears regardless of whether they were involved in a story or not. So I like that she's still a presence. I just, you know, again, just like every single thing that she brings. So I like not totally losing her, at least for now. I guess I didn't really have anything else on that bit. I noticed the exact same thing you did, that Kaylee Ray said what she said and everybody was just like, oh, okay. And it didn't seem to be because she has a bat and is smashing everything and they're just letting her do what she wants for that reason. It seems like it was more of an acknowledgement of like, oh, the longest reigning NXT UK champion, women's champion wants to, I thought I could say champion and then I remembered Walter. Although I don't know what Pete Dunne's reign was compared to
Walter's was
Kaylee
longer. Ray. Oh, Pete Dunne and Kaylee Ray. That's probably pretty close.
Probably close.
Definitely what you want out of your protagonists, right? Have them be passive, talk about getting a partner for a really long time, and then have one fall in their lap through no work of their own.
And I mean, we're gonna get Dakota and Kaylee out of it. So that's, have we seen that before? Have we, Kelly? Have we seen that match
before?
You know,
I want to say Kaylee Ray hadn't started on NXT UK while Dakota did her quick stop there before she came over here.
Yeah.
I don't think it happened.
They did not cross over during the Mae Young Classic. So, ooh. Yeah, they put that graphic on the screen and I got excited. And then for Mandy Rose and Cora Jade, it's another Mandy Rose match on NXT 2.0. So that means it's another good Mandy Rose match on NXT 2.0. This went very well. I think that, I mean, except for, yeah, I agree with how you analyzed the finish with the bat. Just kind of bizarre that's how that distraction worked out. It is, you know, for all the things that I've said about Kaylee Ray and Mandy Rose that are working for me, because they're kind of like with Survivor Series champion versus champion matches, like, okay, this is the date on the calendar, but they are making sure to build up the champion's next challengers rather than wait until afterward. So they are at least thinking ahead in that regard. They're doing that here with Kaylee, obviously different because she's actually involved in the match, but whatever. It's just, it seems to me that maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm picking up on something that I shouldn't be picking up on, but the way that Mandy, you know, yeah, not the greatest actress in the world, the way that Mandy reacts to Kaylee's presence, the way that Kaylee is going after Mandy,
I don't know if y'all can hear me, but y'all muted. Because I can't hear any of one of y'all.
Frank.
Hello? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, for a minute, y'all were muted. Hello? Hello?